If you don't know anything about rugby, don't talk.
Cregan. Drop goal from Larkham.
It's Australian 3-4. They've got the advantage.
Worst press conference. Well done, boys.
Again, thank you for all the support. Please download, rate, review on all your platforms to help us grow the pod every day and every week. We want to make this as good as we can. Today's pod, of course, what we're going to do, stick to our usual thing. We're going to outline what we're doing with the teams for the upcoming clashes, both men's and women's, make our fearless predictions, discuss the topics that grabbed our attention in Shouting in Clouds. But first, let me introduce the other panellists. How are you going, Hossbam?
Yeah, g'day, Happy. G'day, Sully. Thanks for having me back on. It's a privilege to be back with you.
Sully, how's things?
Yeah, not as good as the last couple of weeks. Two losses in a row for the Reds. It's been a bit of a downer on the long weekend.
Yes, mate, I was devastated not to be here last week to talk to you about your fearless prediction of the Tars beating the Drua.
I think I got that 100% right.
You certainly did for the women's. Okay, gents, let's get stuck into it for today. It's obviously got a couple of buys this week for a few teams, so it's only four games this week. The first game is the Blues and the Force at Eden Park in Auckland, starting at 5:05 on Friday. The Blues have made some five changes in the forwards and five in the backs. Patrick Tuipulotu is out with concussion. Dalton Papali'i comes in at seven to replace him. Mark Talia is out with rib cartilage damage. AJ Lamb is filling his spot. Finlay Christie is out, as is Bryce Heem. So Tuafi Funaki starts at halfback with Harry Plummer at 10 and Corey Evans at 12. The Force have Sam Carter coming back. He's come back in as a medical joker, I think, for Isaac Rodder. He's come back straight into the starting team. Harry Potter's ruled out with an ankle injury. And Max Bury takes his place at fullback, which is pretty much a like-for-like replacement. Marley Pearce is returning via his four-week suspension. And Junior Wallaby's midfielder Harry O'Donnell is in line-up for his debut. Gents, what do you think, Sully?
Just a casual 10 changes for the Blues. I love how the Kiwis teams can just, you know, chuck a whole half a team away and put a whole other team in. But they're missing some good players. Like Mark Talia is a big loss. He's on fire. And Stephen Perifetta at 10, he's been playing sensational. But I think they're still going to do the Force, I think, by 10. I'll give it, but yeah, 10.
So you're Blues by 10?
Yep.
Yes. Hossman, what are you thinking?
Well, I know nobody listens to this podcast, so I can actually be truthful on it. Mate, after the Battle of Lake Latoka last week, just on that, there were less handling errors in that game in those conditions than there were in the Tars versus Rebel games on a dry, balmy autumn night in Sydney. Mate, I have to admit and acknowledge the Force are a better side than they get credit for. I like to take the mickey every now and again out of them. I'm a big fan of Hamish Stewart. I like everything about what he brings as a player, both sides of the ball. In my notes, I wrote down exactly what Sally said there. The Blues have, excuse me, the Blues have made 10 changes, and I just, no matter how good you are, 10 changes are 10 changes. So, mate, I'm going to kick off the week with a upset. I'm going to go Force by 2. They're back in their groove. Sam Carter brings a lot of, I think, obviously experience, leadership and calmness to the team. Nick White is in good form at 9. They've got good backup on the bench. If Carlos Tezano can keep doing what he's done so far and be that little terrier over the ball and disrupt and slow and get amongst the bigger guys, he strikes me as a guy that the harder and tougher it gets, the more he likes it. I think he, you know, short of going up and punching somebody, I think he really enjoys the physical aspect of the game.
Correct.
10 changes to the Blues. They're not poor players coming in. Certainly Dalton Papali'i, you know, coming back into the side. Finlay Christie's a bit of a miss. Talia, yeah, Talia's your probably the best winger in the competition because he pops up all over the field and he never gets tackled first up. But AJ Lamb is no slouch either. But Yeah, look, mate, I'm going the Force in an upset by two.
Yeah, I think I said last week, I think Hamish Stewart is the former Australian 12 at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. He's got a very well-rounded game, doesn't he?
Yes, he might not excel in one thing, but he's got everything is there, basically. Mm.
Well, it was an interesting chat on Tuesday's Gagger News with Nutter's stories. Same thing. I put forward an idea of Stewart and Fluke as the Wallaby 12-13. I acknowledge that's going against the grain of having a big unit at 12 to bash and barge and hit the ball up, but also to knock over the opposition loosies that are coming down that channel. But Hamish Stewart, I checked his completion rate this year, and he's averaging about 87-88% tackle completion, which is not in the top achievers, but it's not too bad either. But you don't see him fall off too many tackles. He creates space and time for the players around him. He's a second kicking option. He's a second ball player, but he's a good 12 in his own right. You know, he's a vastly underrated player. And in my opinion, if you picked a Wallabies team now on form, he would be 12 and young Josh Fluke would be 13.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you say, actually. But the Blues, I think the Blues will just have enough. I like, with Marley Pearce coming back in, that should shore up the Force scrum. The Blues have sort of got a bit more of a hard edge about them this year with Vern Cotter being their coach. Stern Vern seems to be getting them on track. I'm going to take the Blues, but I think it will be a close game. I'm Blues by three. I just can't see the Force going away. I think they're a pretty well coached, pretty hard team to break down. The game in the lake in Fiji was, I think you could almost throw that form out the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just one of those days where things happened and, you know, you're playing Fiji at Fiji ball, basically. Having been there once, I can attest to the fact that when it rains hard, and they're still out there playing their beach footy when it's raining. So, yeah.
Just that application of skills, mate, sorry. The application of the skills by both sides, but the Drua didn't go into second gear. They still threw cutout passes, chip kicks. They still were the Drua. That was just, I can't rave enough about the athleticism and skill of the Fijian side. They're just next level. And being in Super Rugby, we're all going to benefit. We'll probably rue it in a few years when they're the new New Zealand and winning everything and flogging the Wallabies again. But mate, look, having them in Super Rugby has been a godsend for everybody.
100%. Next game. Speaking of the Drua are playing the Rebels in Melbourne on Friday. Also, it's the late game. Rob Yoder is out, which is a big miss for them. They've got a gentleman whose name I cannot pronounce starting at open side flanker. Angelo Smith in the back row. I do rate him. Tua Lima, I'm not so keen on. He's a good player, but he's not, I don't think he's just Super Rugby level. Sam Talakai is the captain, which is an excellent choice. Canham and Salakai Lato in the second row. And they're missing a couple of backs, but Nick Eustace has been promoted at fullback. He's got a big boot on him, so he's a quality player. I do like him. Matt Proctor's on the bench, which is also a big return for the Melbourne Rebels. And in the Fijians have got three changes from their team last week. Sully, what do you think?
Again, I'm going with the away team. I'm going with the Drua for this. I know the Rebels got over some team last week, but I don't think it was enough. I think the Drua's on fire. But having said that, they don't tend to travel that well. If they do win, it'll be their first away win for the year. I think Mirror Mirror at Blindside is a plus for the Drua. And I'm going with the Drua by a couple.
Bossman, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Sally's on the ball, mate. It will be sour grapes for me because obviously I'm a fairly Tars biased person. But the Rebs won last week because they sucked less, not because they were such a better team, but yeah, they still won. I think with their skipper out, I think Robbie Lauder's a good leader. I don't think he's rediscovered his best form this year. He's not far off it, but he's a very good leader. You still got Nella on the pine, but I think the outs for the Rebels aren't as big as the ins for the Drua. I think Ikenaveri at two is just Mr. Consistent. He never plays a bad game. He does the bread and butter stuff really well. He's a busy player. He's a big unit, but he's usually good for 65, 70 minutes. I think Mira Mira on the wall is a terrific addition. I like watching him play. Typically athletic Fijian Lucy. Built like an 8, plays like a 12, but he's a really good in. And the one bloke who doesn't get enough credit in that team, and for mine is the best 9 in the competition by miles, is Frank Lomani. I just think that he has that combination of the bloke you want to punch in the face combined with the skill of any of the Kiwi 9s. And as good as some of the 9s are, and I know there's some very good 9s running around, I think if you, again, on form and in our competition, Frank Lomani's got to be close to the Super Rugby Player of the Year. Everything good that comes from the Drua starts with him. He can tackle, he can kick, he can run. You look at his quick taps. So, look, man, I think the Drua's are specials for this. I've got them by winning by more than 2 converted tries. I've got the Drua for 16 for this one. I think they're up for it. It's year 3. The travel's no longer the bugbear it is. I think they're a more professionally run outfit in terms of their strength and conditioning. I think there's more money around for them now through various sources, so they are better prepared on and off the field. And I've got them as specials for this, mate. Drua by 16.
Drua by 16. I'm going to buck the trend here, and I'm going to take the Rebels by 7. The reason, my rationale for that is obviously the Rebels looks like they've had a bit of good news this week. I think they're, again, a well-coached team, which is something that we don't often talk about in Australian rugby. They're a well-coached team. They get a bit out of them. My biggest concern with the Rebels is when they do lose, they lose by a bit. They've had their 3-3 after 6 games, but have a points differential of minus 54. So the 3 games they've lost, they've certainly done well and lost them by a bit. So if they... Hopefully they can dig in and do well. But I will take the Rebels in this game. Chiefs v Moana Pacifica. The D-Max back at 10. Luke Jurgensen is out. Sean Stevens will be missing. Daniel Rona starts at 13. Anton Brown's back on the pine. Tupou Vaia is back after missing last week with concussion. For Pacifica, Nico Jones starts at open side. Olatua Lungi, Ere Papanui, and Samisi Pea, Matini Mataefe all get their start. William Havili's at 10, and Kyron Tuamafalau starts at fullback. The Chiefs have rested D-Mac for the wrong game, in my view. They would have happily taken Moana without him. With him, I think it's going to be 20 or 30 points. This game isn't going to be close, I think, and Moana could well finish third. Bossman, what do you think?
Yeah, man, I think you've summed it up. It was interesting just how much the Chiefs fell away last week without D-Mac. They were well and truly out of sorts last week. So one man team might be a bit strong, but certainly they're going to struggle if he gets injured later in the season. I noticed there's a couple of All Blacks out with on resting policy. I think Jacobson and Sean Stevenson are out on AB's resting policy. But that aside, I still see exactly what you said, mate. I penciled in here the Chiefs by 25, and I hope for Moana's sake that the second half of the season they can live, because they're quite a good team. they don't deserve to, they're no longer easy beats, and they don't deserve to be. They're better coached, better drilled, and play better than that. But I hope the second half of the season they can remain competitive, and that will be the test with their depth, their relative inexperience. All those things will come to the fore. But in this one, mate, I hope I've got the Chiefs by 25. But I'm hoping that there's no blowouts for MP going forward.
Tully, thoughts?
So the word coming out of New Zealand was that McKenzie had a knee niggle last week, so they decided to combine it with his All Black thing. So hopefully he's over that completely. But without Sean Stevenson there to run lines off him, it might be not quite as good a comeback as you think it might be. But interesting that Nico Jones is the son of All Black legend and Michael Jones. Plays the same position as him too. But, I can't see this going any other way than the Chiefs. Actually, it was a highlight of my last weekend watching the Chiefs go down to the Crusaders. I've never backed the Crusaders in my life, and I was tearing my guts out for them. But, Chiefs by 12.
Yeah, I actually picked the Crusaders last week. I just thought without DMAC, the Chiefs aren't the same. I will just pose this question to you guys. Do you think DMAC's a bit like, having DMAC at 10 is a bit like when the Reds had Quaid at 10? You can't replace that type of play. You either he's in the driver's seat or he's not.
Mate, look, yes and no. As you know, we caught up in Queensland earlier in the year, and I think we were watching, I think the first game of the year was whoever the Chiefs played. Carl made a very good point that he's even more dangerous from 15, McKenzie, because he just has that more depth and that more time to spot holes. I would say that there's very few, if any, player currently in Super Rugby that plays better heads-up rugby. If you see him, he's always scouting for gaps and holes or a tied forward or a mismatch between a forward and a slippery back. He's got to be the All Black 10 unless they change their selection policy at this stage. But equally, he could drop to 15. But you make a good point. And the bloke who doesn't get enough credit is Sean Stevenson. I love he's got a traditional kick. He's got one of those raking kicks. You watch players like Tane Edmed, for example, who kick for touch or kick the ball long. They have a great degree of height on their kicks, but they make bugger all distance. When you watch Sean Stevenson, he reminds me of that traditional kicker where it's got that flatter trajectory, and he peels off 50 and 60 meter kicks for fun. He ghosts into holes. He's a bit Israel Folau-ish that way, where Israel had that beautiful long athletic stride. Stevenson has a different running action, but a very similar player that he'll pop up on a shoulder and just slide through a hole that doesn't appear to be there. So that's a really good get, mate. But I don't think it's enough for MP to get the win. But this, again, putting my All Black hat on, McKenzie's your All Black 10 and Stevenson's your starting All Black 15 at this point.
Yeah, true. Let's move on to the next games. The Brumbies versus the Waratahs. So Brumbies coming off tight wing against Queensland, and the Waratahs a tight loss against the Rebels. Much has been said about both teams at the moment, but for the Brumbies, Billy Pollard starting at hooker after Lachie Lonergan's really unfortunate injury. They don't lose much with Connell McInerney coming into the bench. Nick Frost returns to the starting side. Neville's back to the bench. Tom Hooper comes in on the open side with Jerome Batt in place of Jerome Brown. And Jack Debrasini returns via the bench. They're all good ins, really. Waratahs' Angus Bell is back at loosehead. Julian Heavens moves into the hooker for the injured Mahe Vialani, who's out for the season. That's not good news. That'll make Theo Farid go onto the bench. Charlie Gamble's in at 7. Hugh Sinclair moves to 8. And Lolokoi Fekete returns to inside centre. Joey Walton shifts to outside centre, and Parisi's been benched. What do you think, Sully?
Look, if any team can beat the Reds, they're going to be able to beat the Waratahs, you know. So, seriously, though, the Brumbies have worked into their season and they're playing really good rugby. Even though the Reds outscored them 3 tries to 2 last week, and Lolisio's kicking was just 100%. I think he kicked 100%, but he didn't look like missing. So, Brumbies, I don't think it'll be a flogging. I think it'll be between one and two tries for the Brumbies. Vialanu's out for the Waratahs. That's a big loss for the season for them, I think. What do you think, Hoss?
Yeah, mate, look, it's hard to maintain that blue glow I have on Friday's news articles. You look at the losses. Vialanu's not just a loss for the Waratahs. Coloured bias aside, I think he and Fesler, the two hookers for the Wallabies on form. I think they've done enough so far to be well and truly ahead of anybody else in the team. But as Yowie said to me last time I was in Brisbane, where have all the hookers gone? There's injuries to poor old Lachie Lonergan. I don't think there was anything malicious about the tackle from Joe Dirt McDermott. It was just one of those unfortunate rugby accidents. Vialanu's gone. Pollard's a player of the future for sure. And McInerney on the bench is good. I guess this probably gets a little bit into the shouting at cloud thing for me, but by any reckoning, the Waratahs forwards this year have been very, very good. They're winning good quality ball. They're disrupting opposition ball. They're turning over opposition lineouts. Jed Holloway has been a standout. Ned Hannigan has been terrific. Charlie Gamble has been very consistent, although he's out injured last week. The traditional front row of Bell, Vialanu, to a lesser extent, Harry Johnson-Holmes have been very competitive. So when you look at the games that they've played, the forwards have done enough to keep the team, the Waratahs, in the games, and they've done enough to get the Waratahs across the line. But then the ball gets out to 10 to 15. Just step back for that second. I think Jake Gordon has actually been very good this year. I think he's been extremely consistent. I think he's made good decisions as the leader. He cops a bit of flack on Gaga because people don't like him or people don't like the Tars. Fair enough. But actually, in terms of his form, he's actually been very, very good in every single aspect of his own game and that of a leader. But the Tars turn to absolute shit when the ball gets to 10 to 15. Tane Edmed needs a spell. You can't have that many near misses and that many close kicks without taking on some shrapnel and some emotional damage. I look at Dylan Peach last week, and I suppose backtrack slightly. I watched the Between Two Posts on a Monday evening, and there's a terrific green hat on there for all those that are interested in buying our website. But I was listening to Cameron Shepherd, and I 100% agreed with him. Where are the consequences for these players for the absolute rubbish decisions they make? You know, Dylan Peach has two players unmarked on his inside that would have seen either one of them score under the post. Now, would that have meant the Tars won? Who knows? But it would have put them back in the game with the lead. And at the end of the day, I think what was the difference? Six or five? And, you know, we would have scored under the post. He's picked again. I watched the body language pretty closely the other day too. Joey Walton's another one. Joey Walton, all ticker, brave, all those things, but Joey's all tip and no iceberg. He is absolute rubbish at Super Rugby level. Send him back, send him out. Dylan Peach, you stuffed up. Didn't mean to get that. See you later. You're going to shoot shield for 3 or 4 weeks. Isaiah Parisi misses more tackles than he makes. You know, he runs up and has the big hit and does all the, there's the $1 million plays, but he's no good at the $1 plays. Tane Edmett, so we've got Tane Edmett at 10, who's a problem. Walton and Parisi in the centres, who are a problem. Marky Mark has gone missing since the last 2 weeks. I don't know where he's headed. He's probably counting NRL money, as far as I know. Peach butchers a try, yet all of them continue to run out week after week after week. So are the Tars poorly coached or are the Tars poorly selected? Because the defence is good. The forwards are outstanding. The forwards have gone toe-to-toe with every pack they've come up against and come off the field with their head held high. But the Tars shit the bed from 10 to 15. The only time the Tars looked very good was when Harry Wilson was in the centres. I'll give Max Jorgensen a pass at the moment because he's coming back from a spell. I can accept there's a little bit of rust and I can accept that. But why not move the kid to 14 or 15? Why not bring Will Harrison in at 12, 10 or 15? You've got to get, unfortunately, I heard the coach say their injuries are in the forwards, that they've got all their available backs are available to select. Well, okay. Guys, you're 1-6. So you're 1-5, sorry, out of 6. It hasn't worked. Where are the consequences for the Fairies? Go out there, play like shit, butcher tries, miss tackles, stuff up. Oh, guess what? You're in the run on side next week. What's the message there? That mediocrity is acceptable. That it's okay that you're average. That it's okay that you bombed a try and got up and smiled and laughed and just, you probably cost your coach his career. Like, there's got to be consequence for actions. And I'm a Tars blue blood. I bleed Waratahs, but you know, I wouldn't pay $10 to go and watch them while the backs they're selected are still playing. You know what? At this stage, gamble on youth. What do you got to lose? You send out a rookie's 2 or 3 games into his career and he makes a mistake. He's got some exposure. He's going to get better. You send out these allegedly proven Super Rugby players who shit the sheets every week and they keep getting picked. Where's the consequence? Why would Dylan Peach work on his tackle? Why would in this game he makes a 50-meter break, he's got the fullback to defend, why will he pass it to his inside man this week? So that's kind of the shouting at clouds right there.
No, you've done well. You've done well. But I
watched the game live the other night, and 2 minutes into it, there had been 15 kicks, and I thought, here we go. The Tars aren't going to try and win the game. They're going to try not to lose the game. And sure enough, that was rubbish. It was a rubbish game to watch. It was rubbish skills. It was a rubbish game plan. Not one player in that back line was capable of any change or heads up rugby. They were just complete and utter rot. And unfortunately, the Brumbies are going to do things to them that happens in men's prisons this weekend. The Brumbies are going to win by 21 because we've rolled out the same victims, the same mental scars, the same fragilities. They'll all be there. As soon as Robbie Valentini hits someone hard and legally, the Tars backs are going to go to water and the Brumbies are just going to run right and win by 3 converted tries, and rightfully so.
Oh, what to say to that?
Yes.
I've got to say, the same thing with the kicking happened in the Reds with the Brumbies, and for some reason that I can't understand, the new offside rule with kicking has done the opposite to what it should have done. It hasn't opened up play. It's created more kicking. And I don't know why. Maybe because people can run a bit further and they think they can kick it a bit further, but it just seems all about field position and not trying to make breaks or play on. It's just kick, and it's not a good look.
Look, I agree. And you kick for one of two things. You kick for a contestable possession to get it back, or you kick for territory. And the Tars were just kicking it to no man's land. They were 30-meter kicks on the full to a rebel, or they were box kicks that were 25 meters too deep to be contestable. And if you want to go back and watch the replay, it's one of the few times my facts are actually accurate. There were 15 kicks in the first 2 minutes of the Rebels versus Waratahs, and not one of them was contestable. Not one of them was a grass-finding kick to turn the team around, or a 50-20 that almost made it. It was rubbish. And I thought, here we go. Now, did I then factor in 45 handling errors, 18 penalties against? Now, let's just stop there for a minute. Everyone talks about penalties. It was 18-4. I've got no problem with the disparity. Go back and add the advantages to that. You want to talk about the Tars offending? I bet you if there's 18 penalties given, was there an additional 25 advantages? So was there 40 infringements by the Waratahs? Because the end result was there was 18 awarded, but were there how many advantages prior to that that led to that penalty? In other words, in the one section of play, was there 2 advantages and then a penalty? Because it was just horrendous. And I wrote in my notes here, if I'm Jed Holloway, I'm taking the entire back line out the back and I am punching the snot out of them, because he's putting the piggies are busting their hump. Jed Holloway is probably the best lock in Australia at the moment in form, not on potential, not on past, on form. He secures the Waratahs ball and he disrupts the other ball. He disrupts mauls, he tackles, he unloads. He is having a wow of a season, and probably is a six, but he's playing in the back row. But yeah, they're entitled to take the higher numbers out the back after full time and just go, yeah, this has been coming for a while, guys, and just belt the living shit out of them.
Yeah, I think you probably nailed it fairly well there, but I think your point's recently made. If the Waratahs backs do as well as they should be a lot better. Their points differential is only minus 18 after with five games down, losing five games. So they're losing by not very much. They're a kick after the siren and a golden point away from being 3-3, and it's a different conversation. Their points differential's 40 points better than the Rebels. It's 20 points better than the Highlanders, and it's on a par with the Drua, who everyone's raving about. So they're not terribly far away. There's just something in the source that's missing at the moment. My personal view is they should stick with Darren Coleman. I don't think they will, but I think they should. And the reason I think they should stick with him is because so often, I think he's a good coach, and so often in Australian rugby, we just take the easy option, bullet the coach, get on with it, reset it. It just doesn't work. And we'll just end up keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again. But they actually need to say, look, this guy can coach. They need him to actually give him the opportunity to do well. And if he doesn't in two more years, you're not going to be any worse off. But at least he'll have had the opportunity to do what he's done everywhere else he's been, at every other stop he's been. My concern is the knives are out for him, and he'll get done in the next couple of weeks. They'll get beaten by the Brumbies, and that'll be the end of it. The backs are just, to your point, not doing what they should. I think the players I've seen, it's just poor language at the moment. They are trying, but they're just not there. Brumbies will beat by 14. I think that'll be close, but I think they'll kick away in the end. Their bench is just too good.
And I don't disagree with anything you just said. I actually agree that Darren Coleman should stay as coach. You cannot fire your way to success, because for whatever you gain with the next shiny object that catches your attention, you regress with what you had with the previous one. So the gap is never as big as people think. You know, you don't hire a coach who's a 2 and get a coach who gets a 10. You hire a coach who's a 6, you get a coach who's a 7. But in that swap over, the 6 coach, when they leave, you regress to a 2. So it's never as simple as take that person out, put that person in, and tomorrow will be better. So I think they're well coached. I think they're extremely poorly selected. And I take on board the points differentials not much. And I certainly do not hold Tane Edmed responsible for missed kicks. A kicker doesn't lose you a game. A kicker will win you a game, but a kicker doesn't lose you a game. So no issues with a shot sliding sideways or a drop goal hitting a crossbar. That's part of rugby. What I do take issue with is that at the moment, mediocrity is being rewarded by the continued selection of players. And I think if you put Parisi on the bench, wacky do. Put him in Shoot Shield, put alongside Dylan Peach, and alongside, all of a sudden you've sent a message that nobody is safe and that the expectations are greater. Because exactly what you said, mate, they're close, but now it's 1-5. So out of 6 games, they've blown 5. 4 of them are very close. Well, guess what? Something's broken and needs to be fixed, and sending the same people out there to try the same things is not going to get you a different result.
Correct. To your point with the accountability piece, that was what I liked about, even though the Reds lost to the Force, Harry Wilson had a poor game, first poor game I've ever seen him have, and Les Kiss hooked him, put him on the bench because he was having a bad game. And the message that sends to the rest of the team is that that level is not acceptable. So,
it's interesting last weekend, mate. He actually missed 4 of 7 tackle attempts too, which is surprising. I'm not usually a stats guy, but I followed my nose on a couple of things just to do some research. And when I went back and looked at the other games, I was like, oh, yeah, well, maybe that's his work on to be, you know, the Wallaby 6 or 8 we hope he can be, is to be more consistent and D. But you're right, that's leadership.
And you got
leadership's not making the easy decisions. Leadership's making the hard decisions. And taking Harry off for 2 drop balls in an average game, that's a hard decision, but Les Kiss in that one move said this is the standard.
Mm. Correct. Gents, let's just quickly touch on the women's games for the weekend. We've got, I won't bother going through ins and outs or anything like that, but we've got the Friday night at Amy Park. We've got the Rebels versus the Reds. The Reds and Rebels are both winless. Considering the Reds were in the finals last year, they have gone backwards at a rate of knots. Rebels were relatively close, although struggled against New South Wales last week. This game, winner does not have a chance to play finals. This is an early final for both of these teams. I will go for the Rebels to beat the Reds, and that's just not my heart talking. That's actually my head talking. I think they've been improving week on week. I've been watching all their games, and I just think they've got the capacity to beat the Reds this weekend down at Amy Park. Gents, Sully, what do you think?
I caught three quarters of the Reds game last weekend live, and they look like a team who have got plays, but are not looking at what's in front of them when it's happening. So they're going through the motions, but not playing rugby. They're playing moves. So I think they're a bit maybe overcoached, but yeah, they're not there yet. And I think the Rebels are gonna take them.
Hospin?
Yeah, mate. I think there's a lack of size in the Reds team. I noticed it when the first up Fiji ran through them, and Fiji are not the fittest side running around in that competition, but they ran straight through the Reds, and that's been a recurring theme. So I'm with you. I think the Rebs have got them comfortably by two to three scores. I think they'll be sort of 17-18 at the end of full time.
Very true, very true. Next Saturday's game is the Brumbies v the Drua in Canberra. I will take the Brumbies in this game. I think they're a good team who are getting better week on week, and I think they'll take the Drua out. I think, to your point, I think the Drua aren't a very fit team, and it must have taken something out of their legs playing in that slot last week. Hossman?
Yeah, mate, 100%. It was one of the only factors I thought about with the Force too, just playing in those conditions last week. They'll be sapped, the Fijian Drua side, and I think the Brumbies will get this one. Won't be a blowout, but I think it's sort of 8-10 to the Brumbies.
Sorry.
I'm going to go against the trend, mate. I'm going to go with the Fiji girls by a try.
Fair enough. And the late game on Saturday is the Western Force versus the Waratahs. The Force are playing at home at University of Western Australia Sports Park, but they do have to travel all the way back from Fiji, having played in a lake last week, versus the Waratahs, and they are a sharp-looking team. Will probably be a little bit disappointed in how they finished the game against the Rebels. They won by 14, but probably could have done a bit better. They probably left a few points out there. I will take the Tars in this game, and I feel dirty saying it.
Same. Welcome to the dark side. There's got to be one Tars side that wins. Mate, I think in all Australian rugby, two things, the the Force's investment in their women's team is showing dividends. They're much improved. But the I think the improvement in the Tars women's fitness and skill execution this year is markedly up on last year, particularly passing and general kicking, even conversions. So I think the Tars, not a blowout, but I think the Tars by sort of 15.
Yep. Yeah, no, I can't get past the Tars either.
It hurts to say it, doesn't it, Sully?
No.
You're wearing a blue shirt.
Yeah.
He washed the car earlier today. The last segment of the week, which I don't think is really required for the Hossman, is a bit of shouting at clouds. What's on your mind this week, Hoss? You'll have to point something else to rant about.
Hey, look, just quickly, as I said, I'd probably merge Shouting at Clouds in there before. I'll go again, a reversal. I just want a big shout-out to the decisions coming out of Rugby Australia. I think there's a bit of malice and spite around for Rugby Australia and the current executive based on where they played for. But I think if you step back and look at the decisions post-World Cup or since Phil Waugh or since Hamish the Hammer was shown the door, they've been calm and sensible decisions. I get we don't know the full Rebels story, and there's breaking news tonight about the Rebels maybe relocating to Western Melbourne. Take the player profiles out of Rugby Australia and look at what they've done, starting with Joe Schmidt, now Mike Cron, is it Chris Thompson has come on board? I'm sorry, I don't know a couple of the other ones that have already been appointed. There's Lord just
Lord Laurie.
Lord Laurie. The grown-ups are back running the asylum. There's just been some considered and measured decisions made. Good people have been brought in, and I think good people don't come to bad organizations. Joe Schmidt, Laurie Fisher, Mike Cron aren't going to join a basket case, no matter how much money you throw at them. So I think the quality of people they're assembling is testament to the leadership and decisions of those at RA. That doesn't mean that everything they've ever done in the past is right or everything they'll do in the future will be right. But at the moment, there's a level of maturity and calmness coming from RA, and that's only going to benefit us as rugby fans going forward, because there's good people in charge, and that's going to lead to good outcomes.
Charlie?
Oh, mate, I've got a frustration with the amount of time that it takes to set up a line out and set up a scrum. Now, in the beginning, we used to have a huddle at a line out because the crowd noise was too much that the line out calls couldn't get heard in test matches. Now that huddle seems to have gone into every Super Rugby match, and the huddle's not near the line out. It's 15 to 20 meters away. They work out their calls. One prop runs over to the hooker and tells him. The rest of the line out walks the 15 and 20 meters to the line out, and then they do their stuff. All of that takes time. Can't we have the huddle 5 meters from the line out? Or if there's not 50,000 people at the ground, do we need a huddle at all? But the same thing happens at our scrum. 19 people sit around. That's 16 forwards, two halfbacks, and a referee. The referee puts his foot down and says, this is where the scrum is. And then sometime after that, a hooker will walk out and sort of get in position, and the other hooker will come across off from him. And it just takes way too much time. So let's just speed things up. These things are easy things to speed up, and I'm over it. Okay, old man, shout at the clouds.
Look, I love that. I love that. I'm here for it. I agree. Look, it was one of the only good thing that came out of the Reynal thing is introduction of shot clocks, and I'm all for, particularly at that elite level, of doing it. I'll be watching community rugby this weekend, round one of the Hospital Challenge Cup and the Shoot Shield also this weekend. So I'll be down at my local club watching a bit of that. And the noted thing that happens at the community level is the game happens so much faster. The referee makes a decision and that's it. And I think they've really gotten on top of that with the TMO and even the red card, yellow card, red card. I love the fact that it's yellow card threshold, get off, move on with the game, and the TMO makes the decision as to whether he's off or not. I think that's great. So it's just tweaking. The product's really good. My little shouting at clouds is just purely going to be positive this week. This weekend is the final Hong Kong Sevens at the old Hong Kong Sevens ground. Anyone who's ever been there has had a great time. I'm one of them. And a special shout out to Michael Hooper, who is making his debut for Australia in the Sevens. I saw a photo in this week. He's certainly run some size off his body, and he looks fit as. I just hope he goes really well, and I hope he plays well and is remembered for being the good quality player he is. At various times, I don't think he was the best seven in Australia, but I'll tell you what, I do think he's a bloody good player, and he's seems to be a decent sort of human being as well. So more power to him.
Good point, mate. And just quickly, if I can send a shout out, we are in the process of trying to get an interview with Hoops in the next 24, 48 hours on Green and Gold Rugby for his debut as well.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, I think that's about us for the night, gentlemen. What do you think?
Pipe and slippers time.
Yes. Okay, once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Again, like, subscribe, do all of those things if you're still listening to us. And have a great weekend of rugby. Talk soon. Bye.
Yeah.
If you don't know anything about rugby, don't talk.
Gregan. Drop goal from Larkham.
It's Australian 3-4. They've got the advantage.
Worst press conference. Well done, boys.